Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the new episode of the Future Voices podcast. I'm your host, Mohamed Ghania, and today's guest is Emir Pleh. Before everything else, I would like him to introduce himself, and I'll provide further context. Emir.
Hi everyone. Nice to have you here, first of all. As you said, I'm Emir Pleh. I'm here from Sarajevo, but I live in Czech Republic. And we are now in the pub that I manage somehow from distance. So I wish you a very nice stay here. And thank you for having me.
Yeah, Emir is a long time friend of the foundation and a long time mentor of the programs different we have. And he was kind enough to let us his pub so we can film here. And I would first like to ask you, what was the early story of Emir Pleh? What was your upbringing? Some small background regarding you.
Well, I'll try to be quick, but there's a lot of things that can be said. Well, most of all, as most of young kids, my life wish was to be a pilot. And while most of the kids want to be commercial pilots, my goal was to be military pilot. And I was always looking for the ways how to go to the academy when I was a little boy. And then later on, of course, when you grow up, you start to realize that that dream is a bit further away than you expected at first sight. So then I started going into cars more and more. I was crossing streets, seeing how much kilometers per hour can it go on the instrument cluster. And by the time I was, I don't know, maybe 10, by heart I knew most of the cars in Boston at the time was Golf 2. So by heart, when I see the Golf, when I see GTD or GT or something, I knew already it shows 220 kilometers per hour, I don't know, 560 RPMs.
Yeah, or the legendary TAS, the Golf.
Or TAS, yeah, TAS, yeah. With this basic equipment.
Yeah.
And yeah, that was my first, my first love was cars, but I wasn't sure what I want to do in my life. I knew I liked cars, and I had a computer since I was a young boy. And with cars and computers as well, first thing when I get, for example, I was collecting small vehicles, Burago vehicles. First thing when I get them as a present, I totally dismantle them into small pieces just to figure out how it's assembled and what parts doing what, and then I reassemble it and then put it back in the box. I didn't even play with them. I just disassemble, reassemble, and put it in a shelf or somewhere. With a computer, I did the same thing. When I get the new computer, I disassemble everything just to see components, how they work, how they are connected, and then assemble it and then use it, of course, it's not meant to be in a shelf. And later on, yeah, it shouldn't be mentioned here, but I started driving car when I was, my first contact with steering wheel was when I was 4 years old. I was sitting in my father's lap and driving around, and then by the time I was 12, I was driving myself. And everybody thought my biggest passion would be cars, and I would do something around cars. But then all of a sudden, my best friend from primary school, he bought a scooter in seventh grade, at the end of seventh grade, I think. And then you know how it goes. You want to hang out with people. He's my best friend. He has a scooter. Now I want to have a scooter as well. So I was trying to play it around with my parents. No one in my family ever had a scooter or motorcycle or anything on two wheels, except bicycles, but I don't count that. So at the end of eighth grade, I bought myself a scooter as well. And I would, in my life, I have few points that are pivoting points that changed me a lot and that steered me in a different way than I was initially thinking of going. That was the one, definitely, when I bought the first scooter. Just everybody around me, people that were riding scooters at the time, friends of mine, they were having scooters just as a some kind of, I don't know, trend in the moment. But I developed real passion and real love towards it. So I forgot about car, by the way. I wasn't even planning on getting license for the car. It was totally out of the picture. Now the scooters and the motorcycles were in the focus. and I know I'm taking it too long, but anyway, I started building some kind of a sport career with a scooter, even though in Bosnia it's virtually impossible to do that. There's no sport connected to scooters or motorcycles, at least not on a level that you can really live out of it or have some enough funds to live and do only that. I'm trying to shorten the story. Later on, with the scooters, I decided to go on information technology university. Still at the end of gymnasium, I finished the gymnasium. So at the end of gymnasium, I wasn't sure which direction to take. I still wasn't sure what I want to do in my life. I knew it was something with a motorcycle or with information technology, with the computers, stuff like that. And then I went to the university. I started as a first 2 years, do the programming as well. I was always good with math, so it was going somehow, but I didn't have some X factor in me that I can really do that.
Can I cut off you there?
Yes, please.
And I want to add something. Was early Emir an adrenaline junkie?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, because you mentioned aeroplanes, cars, motorcycles, different things that are still, like, I would say, haunting you today. You still have a motorcycle, mm-hmm. You have to drive a car everywhere, mm-hmm. And I suppose you love planes still.
Yeah, but planes are, I would say, out of the picture now, and it was a long time ago as well. I decided to move away from that, but I have some kind of compensation, even though it's selfish to say, but one of my good friends, really good friends, Bakir, he finished the academy in Qatar, and I think 10 years ago. And even though it's not my success, he's a friend of mine, but I'm super proud of him. Now he's already 10 years pilot there. He's now promoted to captain. He's super successful. I think one of the smartest people that I know. So I had that, I would say, compensation that one of my close friends finished as a pilot at the end. Commercial pilot, but...
Yeah, but basically the first thing you knew about yourself was motorcycle car. Mm. And those things still play a part in your day-to-day life, even though you now moved on to different things.
Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but my experience is that you have to find some passion in your life. If you're lucky enough that your work is your passion, I think that's the best combination. If you're a bit less lucky like I am, my passions are motorcycles, even though I love my job, don't get me wrong. But passion, for me, it's totally something different. I still have it in my life, and I'm super happy that I'm able to maintain and to still have that passion and to work with it and have it. Maybe it's because it's a motorcycle and it's a totally different way of living when you live fully, let's say, that biker's life. I'm not on that level, and I'm not aiming to be on that level, but I have a passion towards motorcycles. I have two of them now. I enjoy riding. I'm still, I would say, adrenaline junkie, but now priorities are a bit different. Of course, I had my first sport motorcycle when I was 20 years old, so my way of thinking at 20 years old guy, boy, how should I say it? At that time, I thought I was the smartest guy, and I have experience and everything. Now, when I remember that time, I'm laughing at myself and the way how I was thinking, and I'm happy I survived that time, to be completely honest with you.
But do you regret those things, the things you did with your sports career and motorcycles?
I never regret anything.
Yeah.
The reason why I don't regret it is not, I'm not saying that I wouldn't do it differently with this way of thinking, but I'm 100% sure that at the time when I was making that decision, I really made the decision that I wanted to make. It wasn't affected by anyone. I wanted to do that, and I did it, so...
Yeah, but that's the thing I wanted to ask you right now. Most people make the conscious decision to do something, to film, to ride motorcycles, but they end up regretting it. Do you think it's because of other people's influence, or because they lack the decision-making skills to do something and to stand accountable for their own actions?
I think it's a good question, and I believe it depends on a personality. I'm the type of person that I'm really, when I want to do something, I will do it. I will never cross over dead bodies to achieve that. But I will find a way, and I will achieve it for sure. It doesn't have to be now or a year or 5 years, but I will do it. I mean, I sold my scooter. I repeated. I failed second year at the college, and then I somehow punished myself, and I sold the scooter. Of course, but by that time, I mean, of course, not of course, but my situation was that my parents bought me scooters, and then when I failed the second year, I decided to punish myself. I sold that scooter, paid for that year, and I said, next time, next motorcycle that I buy, it will be out of my pocket, out of my money. And I bought it 12 years later.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about, you mentioned this, it's your own accountability, because most people don't hold themselves accountable for some things. You held yourself accountable regarding your college success or failure in this regard. How is that playing a part in now, day-to-day life?
Well, I think I'm a biggest critic of myself. Not necessarily publicly, but when I'm with myself, I'm always trying to find the ways how to improve stuff. And the ways to improve is to be able to accept criticism and to understand what's not that good. And when you're emphasizing things that are not good, it's some kind of a critic, let's say.
So what's important factor, maybe?
What was important factor?
Yeah.
I think important factor was that I really never cared about other people's opinion. I mean, of course, in a period of puberty, let's say, in that primary school, you want to be somehow, you want to be accepted in a school or in a street where you grew up with the people around. You want to be accepted, you want to be part of them. And then sometimes you do things that you wouldn't necessarily do. For example, I bought a scooter, first scooter, because I wanted to hang out and go ride with my friend. Out of that, I can't even, there's not enough time in this podcast to explain how much benefits I had from developing myself in a motorcycle world. At one point in my life, I was, let's say, in those motorcycles, not motorcycle circles, circles, I was very popular. And that brought me some really good connections, network with the people. I got 3 or 4 jobs via motorcycles, and my expertise with, I wasn't only good with riding, but I was doing mechanics on my motorcycle. That's, I took my first steps in sales, with the sales of motorcycles. So it brought me a lot of good things.
So my next question will be around it. You started your early life regarding motorcycles, then you moved on to an IT-based college, then now you work in sales. How was the transition between those three factors?
There was in the middle part where I did marketing as well. So, at the last semester at my college, I got a job offer from one bank in Sarajevo. And this is also that recommendation that I got. I got the recommendation because I was doing racing with the motorcycles and organizing races with the people that worked with that bank later on. And they recommended me to the head of IT. And I met the guy, we did an interview, and we started talking. He said, I found out that you have interesting hobby. And I said, it's not hobby, it's way of my life, motorcycles. It happened that he was racing with the cars. So we somehow connected there as well. He offered me a job. I decided not to accept it because I thought maybe it was the right decision. I thought I should really pay attention to finishing university and graduating, and then I'll find a job. So after that, I started working in very simple sales. I worked in one sportswear shop. I was selling shoes, jeans, stuff like that. And I remember one time when the professor from my gymnasium, and I must say I was really problematic in gymnasium and in college. I was really, it was hard for me to focus on things that I'm not interested in. And someone says I have ADHD. It was never diagnosed, but it's really hard for me to pay attention to stuff that I'm really not interested in. And one of those classes, I think was, not physics, I was good with history. And I think I met the professor of history in that sports shop. And he told me, I knew you will make it. Like, laughing at me because I'm selling shoes now. He didn't know that I graduated. And I said, yeah, I know you always believed in me. And we just, he tried to put me down a bit, which wasn't important to me. Few years forward, I was opening my company. I was working in here in one big corporation. I was leading corporate sales, and I met this professor in municipality center here in Sarajevo, and he was checking me out. What are you doing? And we just exchanged a few words, and he asked me, "How are you? How are things? Where are you working?" When I shared with him the story where I'm currently at, he was pretty surprised because he thought my limit would be probably somewhere between that sportswear shop or something like that. And yeah, so there are a lot of people that try to put you down probably, or try to mess with your head. You just need to stay on track. I continued later on with marketing. I thought that was my biggest passion. It was until I started working for one manager that was the worst, I would say the worst manager I ever met. And he was working with me. And my personality is, I can work really good with leaders that are really in core, real leaders, especially at that time, because I was fresh from university. I needed someone to guide me, to lead me through the business world, and to help me grow into person that I am, I would say, today. But I stumbled onto the worst possible manager, the bossy type, the guy that doesn't have a clue about work. He just thinks he knows how to delegate, even though he's not able to do that in a proper way because his social skills are very low. So I dropped out of marketing, I would say, because of him, and then moved to sales.
So I wanted to ask this, as someone who is now in a senior position both in your company and as someone who young people or those who started in marketing and sales would look up to, how do you think it's important to have a mentor or a leader, someone to follow, even though you may be not working for them or something different?
I believe that, and this is not my saying, I read it somewhere, people don't leave companies because of work, they leave because of managers. And I would say it's vice versa. I had a manager here in Sarajevo, in my last company that I worked here before I moved to Czech Republic. If we quit that job and move to whichever other company from that big corporation, I would move with him if he wanted me to. Because he was a person that I was really comfortable working with. I had I had responsibilities, but I had a freedom of decision making, freedom of, let's say, trying, failing. And I had someone who I can always address to and ask for help.
I wanted to ask you right about that. That period of trying and failing, how is it important for someone who is in their 20s, maybe mid-20s, to try and fail in different things so you may be better later on?
Well, I have a lot of experience with failing in a ways that I changed a lot of jobs. And I was failing in getting along with managers. That was my biggest failure, because I have a real problem with that type of bossy authorities, and it's impossible for me to work. I'm lucky that I was always able to earn some money. I was ready. I mean, it was going to that point that I was ready to go outside and clean the streets just to avoid working for someone who is a bad manager for me. So I think failing is really good if you learn out of it. If you fail and then do the same thing again without any, I would say, twitching and setting up different approach, that's bad.
Basically, the old saying, one mistake doesn't make who you are, but if you repeat it, it does.
Yeah, something like that. So it's failure is not failure if you learn something from it. That's how I see it. If you don't learn, if you repeat the same mistake again, then it's not helping you.
And how has changing different career paths, different jobs, shaped in the person who you are now?
I think every experience shape you in some way. It had some, it still has some good positive sides of it. For me, everything is positive. But when you approach, for example, when you, now I'm in a pretty different position. I'm in senior level role and I'm in a good position in the company. And I have some experience behind me. Now I have some reference, I have some experience that I can share right away. But when you're at the beginning, and I had a real issue, problems when I changed 3 or 4 jobs. And now when you go somewhere to apply for a job, they always ask you, I mean, I changed job after 6 months, or a year, or 7 months, 8 months. And they always ask you, why do you change so often? And people didn't understand that, and I was always honest. I always said I didn't like the people that I worked with. That's the only reason why I changed. One job I changed because there was, I didn't see any challenge there. I didn't see opportunity for myself to grow anymore. But 90% of jobs that I changed is because I didn't like the people around me. Not necessarily all people, but the main manager that I was working with or supervisor. I didn't like him, and so I changed job. And I'm pretty, whoever knows me knows that I'm really, I don't have that much patience. So when someone tells me, okay, be in this company for 3, 4, 5 years and then we'll see what happens, I'm out. Because I don't believe in long-term commitment to one company, especially in one role. If you change a few roles, horizontally, vertically, it makes sense maybe. But if you stay in the same role, I don't see any benefit for you or the company after 3 or 4 years. For me, it's not there. I don't see it.
Yeah, so you're saying it was what shaped it.
Yeah. I mean, my longest work was, I think, 2 years and 9 months. 2 years and 10 months. I'm not counting this, at my company, but I worked longest period is for someone, I think, 2 years and 9 or 10 months, something like that.
Yeah, but if you compare that to the, let's say, an average person who would spend their entire lifetime working in the same company, or at least 10, 20 years with one company, that's a small, like, small amount of time to spend 2 years with one company.
Yes, it is, but I think that 10, 20 years is something that is left over from the period of ex-Yugoslavia, when people were working for government companies, and the only thing that was important is to have some summer vacation, winter vacation, to have buy a car and to have a good time, to friends, family. I mean, I haven't lived in that time. I'm just saying that this is my opinion. It might be the result of that time. I really don't understand what I have to offer to the company after being there for 10 years. I mean, if company wants to settle without any growth, I can understand that. But if a company wants to grow, I think they should scale people, processes, everything should be scalable. And you need new, fresh blood. You need new people with new ideas. I mean, VH Futures Foundation is something, I like this concept because it's creating new people. It's creating new people to inject into market. But people who will be shaped by the real leaders, by the people who are already in business, who understand the business, who can shape them. Not today's education is shaping you to finish your college, get a job, 9 to 5, get a loan, buy a house, get married, have kids. When you pay that loan, get another loan, buy a car, whatever, and live that way. They're not creating people to be, I don't know, financially aware and aware of business and business opportunities in the market.
So I'd like to say this, maybe you agree, maybe you don't. But if someone, let's say a person, changes often their roles, changes companies, changes different markets that they work in, they are more aware and both more capable for different opportunities, even different bootstrapping things to themselves, because they have multiple skills. As a single person who works only in one company, he doesn't have a lot of skills because he doesn't change position, especially if he spends 10, 20 years only doing one job, being the head of transportation, head of marketing. He doesn't have other skills. But if you move, you can get other skills and get other opportunities and even move in your own life.
It makes sense as well. I mean, I don't agree and don't disagree. Truth is always somewhere in the middle. I would say there are different personalities. For me, I would not be able to work for one company more than 5 years. That's my opinion. I know people who are not comfortable with changing environments. I think that if you want to grow, you need to change something. You cannot grow in your comfort zone. I was going out of my comfort zone on every single job that I took. And that's the way to grow, I think, for myself at least. Maybe someone can work in one company for 10 or 20 or 20 years and develop their skills on some side job or educating themselves in some other things. I totally respect that. I know people like that. I have friends that work for a long time with one company. I don't think that's a bad or good thing. It's just not something for me.
Yeah, it's basically knowing who you are. And before, we were already talking about sales and your background. Let's talk about this pub you actually own, and you're the manager, but you don't live in Bosnia. This is a pub here in Sarajevo. Yes. Can you tell me more about that? What made you want to have a pub and even to manage it from all the way from Czech Republic?
Well, how I got into this, somewhere in my bucket list, at the bottom of my bucket list, there was a bullet point saying own a pub. It's not that I want to be some kind of a boss in there or something. It was just my idea was to have some really small pub, I don't know, 20 maximum 20 seats. And my goal was to have that pub, and after my work that I do during the day, I would open it at, I don't know, 6-7 p.m. I would work there. It would be -1 underground with some small windows, some old neon lights. That was my idea of the pub in my head. But when an opportunity came to have this pub, I mean, I just made a decision one day. I just slept over it and just made a decision to invest. And everybody was pretty surprised. And I would say shocked, especially in my family. Again, no one ever had anything to do with any kind of this type of business. So friends, family, business, because I was working at the time, everybody was surprised. I just wanted to try that. I never ever worked in any pub. My only connection with pub was that I go there and have a beer. And one of my friends had a pub. So I had zero experience with that, absolute zero. I had zero experience in owning a company at a time. But I just decided I would give it a try. And from the start, I knew I'm not going to work in a way that other pubs or bars work. And I strongly and really, I mean, I really strongly believe that people are the same. It doesn't matter if it's a waitress or CEO of the company or president of the board of some company, it doesn't matter, people are always the same. And relationships with people are core of, I mean, every business. If you develop a good relationship with people, you can have trustworthy people, and they can work not for you but with you together to achieve some goals. That was my philosophy from the beginning. Of course, I failed a few times. I mean, I opened pub in end of 2019. We worked for 3 months, and then COVID hits and we were closed. So then again, I needed to find a way to finance it. So we created some loyalty program. I created a loyalty program in 5 days, printed everything, prepared everything, sold multiple of those loyalty cards. I was able to, because I didn't fire my employees, I was able to finance their salary. I tried to get to the point where I don't have to pay for the rent during the COVID lockdown. I wasn't able to do that, so I decided if I'm paying for the rent, then I'll use it somehow. So I offered this place for the volunteers who were taking groceries to the old people. So this was like their warehouse during the COVID. I just wanted to help somehow. And also I involved myself in delivering those stuff around. Then after COVID, I was really involved in this. I mean, at a time, very few people knows, and people usually think, oh, he has a pub, he goes there, he drinks for free, it's always super cool. In reality, I was waking up every day at 7 a.m., I was working until 5, and then I stop by here, see if everything's fine, then I go home, get a shower, change, come back here, and I'll be here every night until 1 a.m., then go home, sleep 4 or 5 hours, then wake up again. So it's not really easy thing to do, but I was super motivated, especially when something pulls you down, like COVID hit, and everybody was closing around restaurants, bar. I mean, I really don't understand that. And this is to prove that people were doing something wrong. I mean, you have a pub for 10 years, then COVID hits for 2 months, and you are out of money. How is it possible that you don't have any capital in your company?
For someone who is only now seeing this and only now meeting you, can you explain the loyalty packet you were talking about? What was it? How did it affect you? And what was the purpose? And is it still active in some way?
So it's not active anymore. But it was really, we needed quick money, let's say. We needed to get some traction. So first of all, we were fully closed. So I decided to give away beer, because beer was expiring, draft beer. So I think I was giving it away for some, I don't know, you bring a canister, we just pour your beer and you go home. Because I would throw it away anyway. But loyalty program was, we created packages. It was called support card. And it worked in a way that you get a card, you get one beer, you get a glass, you get a mask, you get a letter, thank you letter, handwritten and signed by myself, and you get it in a small box, and you get, of course, receipt. I want to show people that this money was really legal. Tax was paid on it, so everything was going through the cash register. So cost of the package was 25 euros, and in that package you get what I was just mentioning. And after reopening of the pub with the loyalty card, you get 20% discount for next 90 days. So if you are regular guest, you can really easily pay off that investment in 15 days if you're regular here. Having 20% discount, I mean, if you're with a company, I didn't care. Literally, it could have happened that you buy a package and you bring 20 people from your company, everybody was drinking, and you're paying in with 20% discount. I was fine with it. And there were two main goals of the campaign, of that loyalty. First was, of course, to have some money, some cash flow, because cash flow is most important in a company, to have some cash flow. And the second was to create some kind of customer base, because we were still at the beginning. It was 3 months in the business, so we were still very young, and we didn't have any firm base of customers. And I created that, because in next 90 days, people with that card started coming. But what's really, and this is probably something to do with our mentality, and I would probably do the same. People were coming here who had those cards, but they didn't use the card. They just, in their head, they said, okay, I will support the cause. I know you need help, I will support you, but I don't want to use this 20% discount. I will come and support business again after COVID, just to support business. And it was amazing. I mean, it was emotional. I mean, positive emotions to see that. And later on, we created some concept during the summer, which was called Lady DJs. And it was super, super successful, because we brought ladies that were DJing, because at the time they didn't really have much opportunities to play somewhere. So we decided we will organize lady DJs every Saturday in October. It was really good weather outside because of the COVID. And we will give those, of course, I pay those lady DJs. When they came, I paid them for playing, of course, they didn't play for free. And I support them in a way, but we also did a promotion for them. And we had the sponsors later on, and it was really, really positive experience. And there were some girls that played here for the first time in their life in front of the audience. So it started developing some, that loyalty program was basis of developing this loyal group of people that really consider this as their own place. I mean, when I was opening, it was my goal, because I had Villa Club 69 was my place to go all the time. I was there, I felt like home. I was going there after work. During the weekend, I was going there playing darts. And I wanted to create here something like that. And I think I made it, not only with customers, but also with the people that work here.
I just want to say, even though this sounds like good marketing for the pub, this is actually true. This is my second time in the pub, and I can say that he has truly some wonderful people supporting this pub, and truly some wonderful relation with his customers that really play effect on it. And this pub is really welcoming with both the food, the drinks, the music, even the games, the cards you have here to play. It's all meant to keep people here and to keep them engaged. It was a well thought out plan by you.
Thank you.
Yeah, that was the reason I wanted to ask, because you allowed us to have this conversation here before anything else. And we had already a couple conversations here in the pub last time. We were sitting on those tables right there. We were talking about marketing and business. And I want to just quickly move on to marketing and business again with you. Something about sales mostly. I just have a couple of questions. So, your experience in marketing, sales, and everything you did, has that played a part in creating the loyalty cup for the card? Because that was something that no other pub, I would say, would thought of, and no other, let's say, coffee bar or something, thought of to create something like that. I think you're one of the unique ones to do that.
Well, I think it played a huge role, not only in that loyalty program, but in my approach to business. I'm not approaching this as a pub. I approach this as a normal company. If I had a company that was developing softwares, I would approach it the same way. I do the finances of the company as well. My people that work with me I don't consider them waitresses. For me, they're part of some different story. And they're really, really heavily involved, and I'm trying to educate them as well in business. Every year we have result review. I share with them the full review, EBIT, gross profit, how much taxes we pay throughout the year, how much we paid for their salaries, how much beer we sold, how much money we invested in some other things, how much money we invested in here, just for them to understand the whole picture and to understand that it's not just selling beer and talking with guests. It has the full system of the company in the background. And for me, the goal is always, for me, the goal is for these people to advance later on. I had a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, I don't remember quite good. There was one really good guy working here. And I was living in Czech Republic already. So he was waiting for me to come here, and he was really uncomfortable, saying that he wants to quit. I just asked him, I just want to know, are you quitting for other pub or bar or something, or you're advancing? He said, I'm advancing, I'm going to work in other company, in some different work. And I was super happy for him.
Yeah, but you just said that. You treat this, your employees, as more than just, okay, they work for me now from this period to that period, but even the fact that you're teaching your employees about finance, about how to invest and what's going on with the pub, the background behind owning a pub, is something really interesting that most pubs, coffee shops, restaurants don't do, because they keep their employees, I don't know, for 3 months, a year, but they don't teach them the background that goes behind owning a pub. Maybe one day some of your employees will own their own pubs because they already have the knowledge that you taught them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, they're, for me, they're salespeople. They're not waitresses. For me, they are salespeople. They're selling. They have bonuses, monthly bonus. They will have from this year. They'll have yearly bonus as well. So, I really highly respect what they do. And some people say you need to have some distance with people. For me, they're part of the family. I mean, I would step in whatever they need. I told them multiple times, if you're in trouble, I want to be the first guy who knows and who will be there to try to help you. If I'm not able to help you, I'll try to find someone to help you. If not, then we'll explore some other options. But I want to be your support in every other way. By the way, they are super good people. To start from that, they're super, super nice, nice people, and I'm super happy to have them as a part of this pub anyway. And yeah, I want them to feel like real part of this story and of my family. I consider them more than friends, honestly.
Yeah, but that's the thing. I'll take it from myself. That's the first time I'm hearing something from that, coming from a pub owner. And the fact you just said they were salespeople. Sales is something I think is truly important in day-to-day life. Let's say a boy is talking to a girl, it's sales that he's selling himself. And even owning being a waiter or being, you are selling both the bar itself and selling the service you provide. And that's the thing with tips. How good of a service you provide, you get tips, basically.
I think everything is sales. Every single thing. And when you go to interview, you're selling yourself. I would say nowadays, also interviewer is selling the company. But again, it's sales. You're selling something, you're promoting something. Here in pub, I have experience of visiting, but now also in Czech Republic. And they have pretty different mentality than here. But I met here the one guy that really made me think. It was long before I started with the pub. The way how he sold me the beer. And I was working with one beer company before in Sarajevo, before I owned the pub. And it was sometime around that time. And I was I'm really loyal. If I work with this beer company, I drink only that beer. If I work with this gas and oil company, I only go on that gas station. I'm super loyal employee. That's how I approach it. That's why I expect from people that work with me. So I went to the bar. I don't know what it was called in downtown Sarajevo. And he was, and I wanted to order some beer. And he said, "Well, did you try this one?" I said, "No." I mean, basic of sales is just asking questions and understand. I said, "No." He said, "But what do you want from beer? Do you want it to be sour, sweet? Do you want it to have flavor, blah, blah, blah?" And I wasn't that expert with the beer. I'm not that expert. I said, "I mean, I want a simple lager beer." He said, "Try this one. Please, try this one." I said, "No, I'm drinking this all the time." He said, "Let me bring you this one. If you don't like it, I'll pay for it." And I said, "Okay, bring it." I ended up having 5 or 6 of those. It was really good beer. Later on, I tried it for a few times again. This just goes to say how these people are really important. I mean, they're face of your company. I'm not living here now. So I'm in Sarajevo once every 2 months. I'm not in pub that much. People that work here are the pub. I mean, it's not pub anymore. They are the pub. They need to be happy with their work. They need to be satisfied so that they can create a really good level of service to customers that at the end are coming to this pub to bring some business or leave some money for the company.
So during this interview, we talked about your early life, motorcycle career, and marketing and owning a pub. But now, as we're coming to the end of the interview, I want to ask you, from your perspective, some things regarding youth, something regarding young people, entrepreneurs, people who are just starting in business that are important to get ahead from your experience. And I'll like first question, creating habits, creating something to learn, finding, let's say someone's 20 years old, What do you think is the most important skill to learn at 20?
Discipline. I mean, I'm lacking discipline. And I'm still developing, working on that. I would say it's a skill. I think discipline is the core of everything. And as I think Mike Tyson defined it, discipline is when you hate doing it, but you do it anyway because you know you have to do it.